step inside the tribe as our market experts share their boots-on-the-ground experience from the front lines of freight tech's emergence. I'm Tim Dooner, and this is Freight Waves Insiders. Welcome back to the show where we go inside the career journeys and brand stories of the people who make freight happen. Joining me today is a woman who brings me hope by being hope. Hope White, that is, CEO of HD White Logistics, the queen of freight. How are you today, Hope?
I'm doing well, Dooner. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing great now that I'm talking to you. You know, one of the things I love, Hope, is that over the past 2 years or so, I've really gotten to know you and follow your journey at HD White, and it's been amazing to see. It's been amazing to see the growth along the way.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been chugging along since I've been on Freight Waves. I really thank you for the support and everything. Everything has just been phenomenal since speaking with you, definitely.
Well, tell me about it. So for those who are not familiar, the few out there, what is HD White Logistics? Give you a little elevator pitch.
So HD White Logistics is a third-party logistics provider out of McDonough, Georgia and Metter, Georgia. We specialize now in container storage and drayage services. So we support all of the ports, more specifically Georgia Port Authority. We do storage services as well as drayage. So we've been doing pretty good with that.
Now, I see that you're busy. I mean, your desk is ringing off the hook. You got papers all over the place. What in this snapshot in time, in October of 2021, this week, what's on your desk right now? What issue is burning on Hope's mind?
Okay, so what's burning on my mind in October 2021 is where am I going to put all of these containers? And how am I going to deposit all these coins in my bank account?
Now, when you're talking about containers, are you talking about like the empties on chassis that are hard to send back to the ports, or what's going on with all the containers? What kind are we talking about?
Absolutely. I'm talking about more so on the import side, trying to figure out how we best can support supply chain with getting all that volume in. I posted an article today where I see Walmart and Target and some others are, you know, chartering their own steamship line just to make sure that Christmas season is what it needs to be. Our critical point right now at HD White is to figure out how we best can support. You know, we have the 10.65 acre facility in Metter. And so our site isn't paved, but we still can store. So what's critical and hot right now is figuring out how I can get my yard paved in time to be able to support supply chain with all of that volume.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a challenge right now. I've been talking to a lot of the port truckers over in LA, there's sort of a war brewing over there between the port and the steamship lines and the, you know, the drivers themselves who don't like the messaging coming from the port about them missing appointments. They say there's very valid reasons there and the port's not doing their job. But, you know, you're close to Savannah, and I've been looking at the vessel map, and Savannah is no cakewalk either. I think there was about 25 containers last time I looked at anchor right off the port over there. So a lot of volume coming into the southeast.
Absolutely. 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 We I think we're more like 32 now ships just out there that's waiting. So you got to like 32 times 15, 20,000 units sitting on out there in the water just waiting to come in. So that's like a shit ton of volume. I don't know if I can curse, but I said it.
Sure. Especially on these audio only ones. We don't have to worry about like the Freight Waves TV audience. We can be a little bit more free and loose.
I don't let it fly now. It's out there. But yeah, that's definitely a lot of volume. And so our biggest goal right now is how best can we support that volume with our services.
Mm. Mm-hmm. How big of a challenge has that been other than like paving the road? I mean, everyone's dealing with the shipping crisis. And one of the things, I mean, you know, I've been hearing a lot of like 3PLs that are like, they're not hiring a ton of people for sales right now. They need like CSRs and operations people because there's so much opportunity just coming in by the nature of the market right now. But what kind of impact does that have on a place like HD White?
Yeah, so labor is definitely across the board for everyone right now, and it's the same for HD White. We aren't some of our bigger competitors, so getting good skilled labor in is a challenge because we don't have the larger salaries, but I do have a solid team. I've actually contracted with a 3PL to help me with a lot of my operational side, and we've also, so we brought up about 7 people in a matter of 30 days that's helping us get everything, you know, customer service, dispatching, operations. We've got a safety and compliance manager, and we even brought somebody in for accounting and billing. So that helped us out tremendously. And then we're on the warehousing cross-docking side, we have about 3 temps that we work with periodically. And so that will help us with the transloading side. So labor has definitely been a challenge in the past, but I think, you know, keeping transparency of what the expectations are and just kind of leveling out the labor, that will help us out tremendously, yeah.
Well, that's today. I just pulled up in my DeLorean though, right? We're going to go back to the future. This is a career journey show. We're going to go back. We're going to set the time machine back to when Hope White was.
Come on with it.
Hope White's 16 years old. We just stepped out of the car. You're 16. What did 16-year-old Hope White want to be? Did you think that you would end up in freight?
Oh my God, Dooner. Are you going to ask me what 16-year-old Hope White
wanted? Oh yeah. Yes, I am.
Okay. So 16-year-old Hope White. Let me see. First of all, I was in the 10th grade going into the 11th. I was a band dork. I played the flute.
Ooh.
But I wanted to be the mascot for high school. So a lot of people don't know I was my high school's mascot.
Wait, what was the mascot? What was the mascot?
The yellow jacket. All right.
So you were like a bee?
I was the queen bee, baby.
Okay, yes.
I was the queen bee. But 16-year-old Hope actually wanted to go into healthcare. Field. I wanted to be an RN. I wanted to heal people. I wanted to take care of people because I was very close with my grandmother and elderly in the family. So I used to like take care of a lot of different people. And so I wanted to actually do that more so than freight management.
Well, yeah, I ask everyone that question because there's very few people. I mean, I think it's changing with colleges offering supply chain courses and having a much deeper focus. But, you know, we're around the same age. When we were going to school, there wasn't a ton of opportunity. And also, like, supply chain, like, who would think of going into supply chain when you're 16? That doesn't seem like a first option. But that's the cool thing about this business, because it's one of those roads that it's like a second lease at life that you can try out. But
Absolutely. You know, 16-year-old Hope, the most I knew about supply chain and logistics is when the truck come down the road, you do your arm like this so the trucker can blow his horn. But my uncle, he drove pulpwood trucks for 20 years. So that was the closest I got to supply chain, but never thinking, oh, a woman can actually manage my uncle. You know, I never thought about it. I just thought about asking Uncle Frederick for $20 because I knew he had the money.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm not a woman. I'm just a guy. But I remember when I joined the logistics scene in Boston, I was 26 years old. And like the next closest person in my age at the office was 38. Right. And I would go to like the conferences and even like, you know, and I'm not trying to say, oh, disadvantaged white man over here. But I'm just saying there was a huge age disparity. And I can only imagine someone like you walking in there, too. And you would look around and it's like, wow, is this my scene? For me, it was like, I'm going to make this my scene and I want to conquer it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that vibe for me came once I actually got into the big orange box, which is THD. I actually transitioned into THD from law enforcement. And quite naturally, I'm a problem solver, a solution provider. Okay, so transitioning from law enforcement, from solving, you know, personal problems to now over to, you know, logistics and a different scope. Oh, man, that just like really fueled me. And so being in the big orange box definitely challenged me on a daily basis where I was constantly solving different types of problems and just grew my desire to want to learn more about logistics and supply chain.
Yeah, you spent more than half a decade at Home Depot. How did you get how did you get inside the big orange box? You mentioned law enforcement. What happened?
Oh, yeah. So actually, I was in law enforcement and I took on a part-time job working at Home Depot on the store side. In Moultrie, Georgia, I was a cashier for the garden department selling those flowers. I was selling trees before I was moving trees. See what I did there? but yeah, I worked at Home Depot in the cashier side. I actually have some friends and family who've been with Home Depot for 25 years, and they told me about a warehousing facility that was coming, you know, being built. DFC in Locust Grove. So I considered moving to Atlanta. And that's where I actually got the job once I got to Atlanta.
Ooh, well, Home Depot, like speaking of charters, they actually just chartered their own vessel. Home Depot is one of those companies that thrived during the pandemic, especially the early stages because of just the amount of sales. Everyone wanted to build a pagoda outside and expand their home office and all of that. But some of like the supply chain stuff I know for them has come home to roost. Like I was, I got a new house out here in Chattanooga. So I was looking for some decorations for the outside. And I know like those like 20 foot spooky displays they have, those were delayed. Yeah. They got the charter in. Yeah. I think they're finally showing up now, but usually they would have those, you know, that product out about a month ago. I mean, we're in October now.
Yeah, definitely. Typically, Halloween products definitely starts moving around June or July. And I have been seeing, you know, limited amounts of Christmas decorations and Halloween decor in the store. So you're right. It's definitely a backup there. I think one of my mentors told me about 2 weeks ago that for Savannah Fort, they're not going to even get 40% of the volume. That's the most they're going to get for Christmas holiday. So I've been like telling my friends, you better get your children toys real early, because if you wait to November, you might not get your kids toys.
Absolutely. I mean, I've already got a ton of the Legos ordered. But, you know, the thing I've noticed, too, is Amazon is just really not that great right now, especially for toys. Yeah. You go on, it's all like resellers, third-party resellers, much more expensive. Yeah. Now, if you go to like Hasbro, though, or you go to Lego, you might actually have better luck finding the inventory at a better price. Absolutely. I sure have.
Absolutely. You're definitely going to have to go to some of your direct vendors to get the products that you're needing for Christmas, because if you depend on your old faithfuls like your Amazons, you're going to be stuck. Walmart, stuck. So you might as well go straight to Nintendo or Hasbro, like you're saying, Lego, and get what you're going to get for your kids.
No, Home Depot, that sounds a bit like trial by fire. It's a huge mega retailer. I remember my first account when I started at FedEx Trade Networks was, it was similar. It was trial by fire, but it was Reebok. It was the Reebok Adidas account. And I'm like, why would you give this to me? I don't even know what I'm doing. But it helped me learn a ton, and it made me learn a ton really fast. What did you learn inside Home Depot that has a ton of freight and is probably very demanding?
Listen, one of my very... trial by fire vendors with Home Depot was probably Milwaukee Tools. Milwaukee Tools or Black & Decker. So whenever they would send over their POs through the system, oh my God, them lines. Golly, you going from a 20 line purchase order to 1,400 to 3,000 lines, which means that doesn't mean that's 3,000 units. That could essentially be 60,000 units in a truck. So whenever that would come in and we have to receive that, that could be a nightmare. That definitely helped me learn how to have conversations with the vendors, how to explain what was needed for our systems to be able to freely receive that product into the building to reduce some of those challenges. So that was probably one of my trial by fire vendors that I learned a lot from working at Home Depot.
Oh, I know. With footwear, you're talking about like multiple sizes per SKU and multiple multiple HDS classifications for it. It's a nightmare and it's a lot of volume, but you know, repetition, it breeds, I guess it's a tough skin. But so did you finally have enough of like Milwaukee Tool and Black & Decker that you decide that, you know, HD White? Well, like when did that come into the picture?
So actually before that, I transitioned from doing EDI, ASN, that type thing over to actually transportation. That's like working with the carriers, managing the carriers for peak season or just day-to-day operations for our pickups or whatever. But I transitioned into HD White probably a year or two years after I took that role. My husband bought a truck. And so that's how HD White was put in the brain, because I realized my husband is not making the same money that we over here paying. I need some old coin over here somewhere. Okay. And so that's how HD White was initially formed. HD White was, before HD White, was called H. Allen Logistics. Because I was thinking, I'm going to tell you straight up, I was saying, I'm going to make $1 million in my first year. I don't know if I want my husband to get my money.
Oh, okay. Very scandalous. All right. Well, I always wondered what the HD, I know, obviously Hope, I didn't know if your like middle initial was D or was like Home Depot White or like what,
oh my God,
where the HD came from.
It's Hope DeAndrea White, which is my name, HD White.
Now, I love that, though. You know, one thing when you get to look at a lot of invoices in freight, you start to learn where the margins are, as you did. And you're like, you know what? There's a bag out there for me to get. And we're not picking up all those coins for the jukebox. And, you know, mama needs to dance. I love it.
Yeah.
But you're like, so you've grown the company, but you're still very hands-on, right? You're managing operations. You manage the brand. Yeah. You manage the marketing. Yeah. You manage the communications. Yeah. You do promotional podcast interviews like these, while also going to the ports and expanding relationships there and trying to move hemp and all these different things. Tell me about the growth and have you decoupled some of these roles a little bit, or are you still as hands-on as you were when it was just you and one truck?
So I am still very much the marketing piece, of course, you know that, of the business. I'm still very much the sales side, but I'm in partnership with 3PL that I brought on to assist me. And I'm very much have delegated a few of the roles out. So the accounting piece is not out of my wheelhouse. I don't do that anymore. Customer service, dispatching, I don't do that anymore. And then the last piece, drivers. Talking to my drivers, payroll, no son, no Betty. see you, bye. So I have delegated those roles because I realize I can't do it all and the business can't grow if I'm constantly in the business and not necessarily working on the business. So bringing on those entities about 30 days ago has allowed me to free up a lot of my time and begin to work on growing the business further.
Yeah. It's probably a smart move too, especially when it comes to pay. It's always nice to have like a firewall between that, a mediator. Otherwise, you know, you start getting blamed for everything, especially as the figurehead, and you can't do any right. Where is at least if it's delegated, if something is bad, you can always just step in and be like, "Well, here's our reasoning, etc."
Yeah, doing my phone never not wrong. Like I started dreading for the last 4 months. Most people will be celebrating Friday. They ready to go to the club. They ready to go eat or have a date night or whatever the case may be. Oh, Thursday at 5, I started cringing. Oh, God. Tomorrow, I got to get people's payments. Oh, my God. Oh, direct deposit, make sure it went through. Like, I started cringing. So, yeah, I don't have that anymore.
Well, I mean, look,
don't have to worry about that at all.
Everyone out there is looking for the magic bullet on retention and recruiting and keeping drivers. Well, what have you learned in interacting with drivers and retaining your own?
Transparency is my biggest thing for driver retention. Transparency and consistency. Even if you're having some challenges, even if the work changes or your expectations changes for them, being completely upfront and honest with your drivers about what's going on in the business has definitely helped me retain some drivers. I shoot it straight. And that has probably earned me a lot more respect than anything. And if it doesn't work, the partnership don't work, it just don't work. That's it.
Well, you know, I talk to a lot of drivers and they talk about how being alone on the road, things like, you know, things like they cycle in their head and it can get really negative because you don't have a lot of people to bounce ideas off of, right? And this almost this happens too in a work from home environment. I've noticed that. If I don't talk to leadership for a long time, you start constructing your own narrative in your head. Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, it's not always, sometimes it's not a positive one at all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't deal with a lot of negative Nancys in my organization. I try to keep them on the high side. And the only way to do that is transparency. Another thing that I help with my drivers, I try to push and encourage is growth. Getting them to understand that there is, you know, opportunities beyond the truck may not necessarily be with HD. I actually push some of my guys to kind of go further in their own companies and starting their own business to help them understand that piece of it where we can partner in that way. And so that's one of the things that I do a little differently than most companies.
Well, I love that. You help them grow a little bit. Pour a little water, put them out in the sun. If they get bigger than the pot, that is HD White. Hey, go plant yourself in your own field. Let's still work together. That's very noble. And you know what, too? I think a lot of times leadership forgets that. Some people can be very entrepreneurial, but they forget that they might be employing people who are entrepreneurial as well. And at a certain point, they get bigger than that fish tank that they're in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Whenever they feel like they're bigger than the fish tank, then it's time to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's time to go.
Because you're the big fish in that tank. This is White's tank.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Hope, one of the things that you have said that inspires you, and this is even on your LinkedIn bio, is getting ahead in a male and the male-dominated world of freight. So since you've started HD White, has there been any challenge there being a female in freight with being taken seriously, or have you been surprised at the reception that you've received? Tell me a little bit about that.
So I'm actually having some challenges right now with that same concept. And it's not necessarily just being in a male industry, but it's being in a white male industry that I'm having some challenges. The space that I'm playing in is containers. I'm playing in the storage space. And so I'm having some challenges with some vendors who are wanting to do business or who are representing customers who want to do business with us, respecting that my services is just as valid and my prices is the same as my competitors. Don't try to lowball me because I'm a Black woman.
Wow.
And so right now I'm having some of those challenges where people don't respect my sweat equity and my knowledge and my experience. I'm having that trouble right now.
Wow. I mean, how do you, because not just on a business level, but like that has to be kind of impactful on a personal level as well, right? Because it speaks to a condition that, that's been going on in America for a long time. And of course, yeah. I mean, anybody who would act surprised about hearing this in freight, either has their head in the sand or is bullshitting themselves.
Yeah.
But how do you personally overcome some of that stuff on both a personal and a business level?
So I'm not going to tell you. It's definitely an ego punch I guess you can say a ball buster in some regards. I don't have balls, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's a ball buster because you know what you know. You know that you've been in the business for a while. You've been in the business from two different perspectives, one being the customer and now you being a service provider where you've had a great deal of experience, a great deal of hard knocks and successes. And then you have someone who's coming in trying to tear down your work or tear down your service and make you not valid because of your skin color or because you are a woman. And what I hold to is I know what I know. And I back that up. I think a lot of my challenges, I know data, I know facts, I'm always following things, and I've experienced and did a lot of work in this industry. So I just hold to that. I stick to the knowledge, I stick to the skill set, and I try to be fair across the board. A lot of my competitors or these vendors that I'm talking about, they end up circling back around because ultimately they still need me. So I just try to stay true to who I am. I always stay calm because the other challenge is not looking like the angry Black woman mm-hmm. or responding with my emotions. So I always remain professional and stick with my facts.
Yeah, because you don't want, you know, you don't want to validate what they're doing. Oh, see, that she's exactly how I thought she would be. This is how she's coming at me, which is completely unfair because this is coming from not just a systemic problem, but, you know, a personal individual problem that someone's taken up with you by acting like for some reason you are not on the same level with them. And I'll tell you something.
Yeah, like I'm being difficult. Yeah.
Well, in freight, I mean, freight's a bit, I've been in a lot of brokerages and even without the race component, a lot of management style in this business is smile up, kick down, right? So it's,
absolutely.
There's a lot of toxic environments out there to begin with. And then I think that also in this industry, you have people who are so used to just like, where's my freight? Not getting thanked. There's so much abuse that they have to, it's sort of like when someone comes home and they yell at their family instead of everybody else. Like they transfer that anger onto other people. And then you also put that layer of race on there. Then you put that layer of gender and you really have a lot of ceilings to break through.
Yeah, absolutely. Now one thing I don't do is I don't hunker down. And I don't dim my light for nobody. Now, there was a time in this industry, actually, my reason for my name, if we really want to go back there and get a little history lesson.
Sure.
The reason why I created my name, H.D. White, was because I paid attention to J.B. Hunt and C.H. Robinson. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted my name to, when people say my name initially, is not know that I was a Black woman owning a logistics company because I knew there was going to be some challenges and it was going to be an uphill battle. So that's actually why I named my company H.D. White. But I actually found my power and strength in coming out saying, hey, I'm a knowledgeable Black woman in the logistics transportation industry, and here I am, you know. So that helps. But once I stand in my power and in my knowledge and push back and I don't be emotional and I give facts, they end up having to respect me, and that's it.
Well, Hope, have you seen any, like last year, every company liked to message out that, you know, they were getting a chief diversity officer and you know, we're doing this and that about race issues. I mean, lo and behold, it had to do like, oh, this is convenient. This is coinciding exactly with what's going on in America in the news cycle. But a lot of companies did. They said we're going to put in supplier diversity initiatives and all of those kind of things. Have you seen any of that come to light?
Yeah, absolutely. If I may speak frankly, I'm actually in a mentorship program right now with the Home Depot. Through supply diversity, they have a heck of a supply diversity team there. And through their partnership and with Georgia Minority Supply Diversity Council, we are being groomed right now for some heavy business within Home Depot's network. I have seen a lot of good pushes from different organizations. Target, Walmart, UPS has been sending out a lot of bids for minorities. There are a lot of initiatives where the supply diversity, that chief diversity officers that are being put in place are actually doing the work. But then you also still have some that are fluffing. I don't think they realize that they got some people in play that still are harboring a lot of emotions and don't really want to help us get that diverse spend or those diverse dollars to help minority businesses be successful.
Well, I mean, that's somewhat of a positive. Then that sounds like at least some progress is being made, and some of these initiatives are being, you know, put yep. forth.
Yeah,
which is cool to hear. But even over these past few years that you've had the company and you've had to deal with this stuff, you've still persevered and you've still grown the business. How have you gotten into? How have you grown it? For example, like how did you get a relationship with the ports, and how did you get into hemp?
So one thing, okay, so. I'm a Southern girl. Mm-hmm. I always tell people I'm a country girl. And with me being a country girl, there were certain things that we were taught to do early on. Okay. And that's speak to somebody, have a conversation, be polite, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I learned how to have conversations in rooms and in settings that typically kids today are not made to do. Okay. So those skill sets of learning how to have conversations and build relationships is what actually helps propel me in business. I can talk in front of a room of about 50,000 people off the top of my head. Okay. That is much needed in business. And people don't realize that you got to be able to be confident and understand how to have those conversations. So me transitioning over into that, into the corporate side from working at Home Depot, understanding what the customer needs are, and then being able to have a conversation is what helped me get there. But building those relationships came from attending networking events, you know, webinars, seminars, workshops. I just kind of look for any type of resources that will help my business propel to the next level. And I typically do that through the minority certifications, the woman-owned certifications. They have a lot of different events for you. They partner with a lot of the corporates that people want to do business with. But I also will go knock on a corporate's door and figure out through their supplier diversity teams what is actually needed for me to do business with.
You know, you bring up a great point there, too, that ability to speak off the dome and be comfortable doing it. I remember when I first got into freight sales, I was like a nervous social anxiety wreck. And that anxiety transfers onto other people, right? And you're just nervous because you're nervous. You're like, I don't know how they're going to receive me. But people can read that and they're like, you know, they may not trust you. They're certainly not going to be as apt to give you business, so much so as someone who can just kind of go off the cuff and make people feel comfortable. Because when people feel comfortable, it reduces their anxiety and it takes the friction away in some of the business decisions that you want them to make in your behalf.
Yeah, that's probably one of my biggest assets is being able to make people feel comfortable with talking with me. And I think that's because I'm very, I'm a humble person. I'm not very difficult. I kind of lead every conversation with empathy. And just sometimes that could be to my detriment. But for the most part, I lead every conversation with empathy. That probably goes back to that RN thing, taking care of grandma when you was growing up. And so with that, people feel more relaxed to have conversations with me in all settings because someone's always dealing with something. So, that just helps people feel more comfortable and have a conversation with me. There are people outside of their jobs, you know?
Sure. Well, you're trying to set up the sort of the infrastructure and some logistics to get into the hemp market now. And I did see the House is looking at a federal finally making marijuana federally legal, which I think in the Southeast here, that's probably what it will take for the governors of our various states to actually go ahead and do it. But it seems like it's inevitable and it's coming. How is that hemp market, though? What are the the challenges and what's good about it?
So in Georgia, there's not really many challenges right now. Everything looks like it's passing smoothly. We're getting ready to start moving some hemp here. It's harvest time, so we're getting ready to start moving some harvested hemp as well as some, what is it called? I forgot. Drew a blank. We're getting ready to move some now. We had three clients reach out to us here in the last 2 weeks. The only challenge I would say that we have is getting some of the smaller entities to accept our pricing, because I don't think they really understand the risk of what's required still, even though you do have some agencies that's in Georgia that's saying that they're not locking people up for it. You still may have one or two cops that don't know yet. And so right now, getting some of the customers to accept our pricing is probably the biggest challenge I have right now.
Yeah. Well, and just because of the look and nature of hemp, if someone wants to give you shit and probable cause, it looked like this. I mean, they can give you a hard time over it. It can cause delays. It's one of those things that you just have to look out for it and be mindful of. You've thrived, but you've seen a lot of things. So I want two stories out of you. First, let's have your horror story. Then let's have a success story. What's a horror story from your time in freight?
Donor, you want two horror stories out of me?
No, I want a horror story. Then I want a win.
Okay, you want a horror story and a win. Okay, horror story. My fault or customers?
Anything that was like this was one of the bigger challenges you've had to overcome since you've been in the business.
Oh shit! God, I got one going on now, but I don't know if I want to say anything about that.
You can change the names to protect the innocent.
No. Okay. Let's go back to horror story. Horror story is I had a customer that we were doing business with on the grocery side, one of my drivers had a touch freight, and one of my drivers had his toe ran over with a pallet, and the driver didn't call me immediately. He went back and told the customer, and the customer sent me the driver's foot on email, which is HIPAA violation. And the driver was kind of basically setting me up for a lawsuit, and they kind of assisted him with that before I can actually get in there and say, hey, listen, hold, it's a process and there's a procedure. So that was kind of bad. And then I had another horror story of it's not my load, but it's a load that I helped. A driver leaving a fully loaded truck of chicken at the truck stop, and the roofing unit went down.
Ooh. Who had to clean that slaughterhouse out?
The owner of the truck.
Owner
of the truck. Okay, and a very good win for us. So we have landed a large contract, and we've been doing business with this client for a while. We've landed a large contract with one of the largest vendors for the state of Georgia. They've trusted us with about 60% of their volume for drayage freight. Yeah.
Not bad.
As a minority woman-owned company, so we do a lot of their drays and storage for them.
Not bad. Let's circle back to the beginning here. We were talking about the ports. How has servicing the ports been with all of this congestion?
So there are some good days and there's some bad days, to be honest. Some days our guys go in and we can get all our boxes out timely. And then there are times where all our chassis are full. We don't have any equipment available because I only have 30 chassis. And then go in and we don't have any equipment, and now our driver's waiting 4.5 hours for one chassis, and he or she has to do 3 pulls, and so they're waiting 3 or 4 hours for one chassis, and it's 2:00. Port closes at 4:30. It's not going to be possible, and so that's some of the challenge that we're having. And then lastly, to be completely transparent, some of our customers are not being honest with what's going on in those boxes. So, for example, you know what? I got another horror story.
Okay.
I'm going to shoot this thing straight because I know they're finna pay me my money and we're going to be done.
All right.
Okay. I have a client that literally sent me a DO and a BOL with details of a container being 42,000. One driver scaled it, but he forgot to send us the ticket. So the other driver picked the load up and took it on to Florida. We got to the scale and it was 88,000 pounds. But the customer put on the DO that it was 42,000 pounds. In conversation, confirmed it was 42,000, and on email, confirmed it was 42,000. They intentionally deceived us and told us out their mouth that they did because they wanted us to avoid the scales at night.
What? Wow.
So, and we've been having that container now for 60 days. It has not moved. So it's horrible. Okay. So that's the horror story. But other than that, just getting the customers to be honest about what the expectations are. Is it on its last free day? Is it in demurrage? Do they want to pay the fees? Those are some of the challenges we're having. And then lastly, payments. Pay me my money. Run me my check. That's one of the biggest problem for us as a small business, because oftentimes we can't get factored. Because it's so much volume, so quick, factoring companies are very limited as to how much they were willing to give us. And certain customers can't be factored for several different reasons. Not necessarily that they have bad credit. It's just several different reasons. So getting our customers to do the prompt payments, net 7, net 15, net 20, whatever, net 30, it's hard over here.
It is hard. And it's one of those things, too, that when you're smaller, the other players take advantage of you, right? They're like, well, yeah. They think they have more leverage on you for a variety of reasons. And it never really works out good. And Fred, it's like, why are people so dishonest in this business, right?
Yeah.
They're like, so many used car salesmen in this damn business. Like, at every point, too, there's just as many liars as there are good people within there. I remember dealing with invoices all the time, and it was like, you guys, you can't just put whatever you want on here. Like, this needs to be accurate.
So, okay, I'm so glad you said that, because I thought it was just me experiencing just some bad apples in the industry. Now, we've made some mistakes. I ain't trying to say we perfect, because, honey, we've been over here mucking up. I mean, we've been messing some shit up over here, but we figuring it out.
Yeah.
Okay? But you're right. There is a lot of dishonesty. There is some integrity issues we have with a lot of different, not necessarily from customers, but from drivers. We have drivers that are telling us they're taking boxes back. They don't. Your shipment's sitting out 28 days or 10 days or 5 days or whatever. And they've gotten paid for taking a box back. And then, you know, we lost it in the checks and balances and making sure the box got back in, whatever. And then on the customer side, not being honest what the box is, telling us a dry box, we get there, it's a damn reefer, you know, and you knew it was a reefer, and you know, and it's a mess. It's a mess. So I agree. So, but what we do is we just kind of still be transparent, still be patient. We don't lead with emotion. You cannot lead with emotion over here. And that just kind of helps us out a lot now. Yeah.
So with the a lot of people have suddenly taken an interest in chassis because they're starting to hear that's one of the reasons. So from your perspective, what is the problem with the chassis? I know in LA, a lot of it is, it's just like empty containers sitting on chassis, and people are like, why don't they just pull the container off the chassis and take the chassis? Or why don't they just bring it back to the port?
Yeah, it's not that simple, just pulling a box off a chassis.
Yeah, just knock it off.
Yeah, just push that shit down and get that chassis in. Come on here. No, you can't. You can't do that. You definitely got to, you know, organize that and get you some equipment to do that. But I think the biggest problem with getting the chassis returned is that there's just not enough drivers to do that many turns. And then when you do get the drivers in, the port is congested. So just getting to go back and forth is just a big, big challenge there. There are a lot of different factors there. I have a client right now that they really want me to do specifically that, empty returns. And they're trying to get us to lock in with how many we actually can do. And I can't give them that because there's so many factors there at the port, where we're located right now with the highway and Savannah Pool area is doing some road work there. So I can't lock them in at the numbers that they're wanting to be locked in at. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a challenge, and it's one of those things that it's not just any one entity or any one link in the supply chain. There's a lot of different factors. A lot of them are just because there's a way that freight has done things for a long time, and that probably needs to change. But the hard part in freight is we're so used to it being cyclical, right? That you don't really necessarily want to. You know, everyone's going like, okay, just in case an optimization caused all this. And it's like, okay, yeah, you're right. But if you did, just in time, if you did just in case, that would have major ramifications on the warehousing space in the United States of America and on retailers and the amount of inventory they have to keep on hand and all of those things. So in supply chain, you can't just make these massive shifts overnight. It takes a lot of effort. I mean, if you look at a warehouse space now in a just-in-case environment, it's not like that's easy to find or cheap.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So warehousing. Oh, God, you know I teach about that.
Oh.
You know, I'm trying to get some of my students to understand the need for that. Right now, Savannah is about 15 million square feet short, what they need for this peak season. 15 million, okay? Warehousing is not cheap. The market is through the roof. Okay. Right now we were looking at a space down in the Savannah area, and it is four times what it was last year. Four times. And the owner only wants to lease it to us for 12 months. You want to know why?
Because he thinks it's going to go up again?
They're going to auction the shit out of it when it comes time for that renewal or that lease. They're not going to give it back to us at the price that it was, that it is.
Brutal. It's a brutal space right now. Like, I don't envy anybody who has just to deal with that at the moment.
So
a lot of people too, they go, well, why, you know, there's open space all over America. Why don't you just put like a warehouse or a DC here and there? And I don't think that they realize that these things need to be relatively close to ports and to highways, and they have to be accessible, or else it's going to cost you a shitload of money in freight. So it's not really a win.
Yeah, it's not a win. You definitely do need to check your economics, your surroundings before you acquire warehouse space or before you build a warehouse space. You do need to understand its tie-in with supply chains. So are there other facilities in the area that you're going to support? Are there major highways, major freight corridors, I call them, in the area that will allow you to be able to do good business with you having a warehouse or a cross-docking facility? You're absolutely correct. You can't just put that shit in Timbuktu and expect to get business. Yeah.
Who's your role model? Do you have an influence?
Oh, God. You talking about a celebrity world?
Well, maybe both. Do you have like a real world like mentor and influence that you run things off? And do you have like an icon that you look up to that you're like, man, that person's crushing it?
Oh, yeah. So I do have a real life mentor that's in this business. He's been in the business over 25 years. He's out of Savannah. And I don't want to say his name because I don't like people in my damn business.
Yeah.
When I say people's name, people start calling people and I don't like that shit. Mm-hmm. that's my mentor. He for me.
Yeah, I got you.
He mine. Okay. but mentor wise, I think my best mentor right now would have to be, business wise. I like the way Jay-Z and Beyonce move, of course. Everybody knows that.
Sure.
Yeah. From a freight perspective, it would have to be Jeff Silver.
Oh. Oh. Nice choice. Interesting choice, too.
You want to know why?
Yeah, I do want to know why.
Where did Jeff Silver come from?
Where did Jeff... Coyote?
He can't... But where did he come from?
Oh,
Where did he start? Where did he start?
At the bottom, and now he's here?
Started from the bottom, now. Yeah. So I like Jeff's business model. I like his overall perspective of bringing the youth in, because that's his, you know, he has a lot of college students and keeping his company young and fresh. And then he's also partnered with UPS to manage about 95% of their brokerage side. And so I really like what he does.
Well, good to hear. That's not a bad choice.
And then the other part of it is that he works with his wife.
Uh-huh. You like these couples. You like these power couples.
Yes. I like power couples. Absolutely, I do. I like teamwork.
Is that because you work with your husband?
Yeah, I work with my husband. I don't tell my business on this podcast, but yeah, I work with my husband.
Well, you already told me you were trying to cut him out of the business in year one. You were like, maybe this won't be when we just stay in a long time.
Yeah, well, I work with him, donor.
All right. Well, we're almost out of time here. So what's been the most rewarding part of this journey right now in this snapshot in time?
Definitely being a part of conversations and in spaces that minority women wouldn't typically get opportunity for has been my best. Learning more about this industry. Typically in the Black community, we think trucking is driving a truck and dispatching. Maybe even brokering, but understanding that the world of logistics is much larger and greater than that. And there are so many different opportunities for people of all color in logistics and supply chain. So I think that's probably been the most rewarding for me since being on this side.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have to echo what you just said, and I agree with it. And, and I think people have that limited long view of freight, and they go, you're going to be a truck driver. It's this super blue-collar thing. We're like, it can be entrepreneurial. You can start your own business. Yeah. Now you can get on the data side. You can get on the tech side. You can get on the marketing side. You can get on the media side. You can get on the driver side. You can be on the port if you like being hands-on. Or you can work in operations like Hope, or you know, there's just so much more opportunity, even education, there's so much more opportunity than there used to be. And it's really cool to see. And I like that you're also on those front lines pushing forward advancement on things that always aren't, you know, in my cone of vision, which are like some of the race issues, just because I don't experience them every day, right?
So And
those are the kind of things, any kind of change you really have to push forward, you're going to get pushed back. And you,
absolutely,
you know, the uphill battle for you is more so than a lot of people. So I have so much respect for the fact that you're picking up the flag and moving that fight forward.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm definitely trying to educate us, you know, the correct way. For supply chain. And when I say correct way, I want us to understand that it's a lot of diversification throughout the industry. One thing I learned about in the last 3 months was husbandry. I said, what is that? Is that somebody's husband at the port? Well, no, it's actually all of the services that surround the ships, the cargo ships, once they dock, what their needs are. I didn't know anything about that.
Well, I thought animal husbandry was like when people sleep with like horses, isn't it?
No, we're not talking about
Well, if you put an animal in front of it, it suddenly becomes this dark, disturbing thing.
No, we're talking about husbandry services that are for the cargo ship. Donor, you went to the left.
Well, animal in front of it, it really alters what you're trying to say there. You take animal away, it's a completely different thing. You got to be careful about where you place that word.
Husbandry.
Okay.
I want you to look that up.
I will.
Get off the podcast. Okay. But I actually have started offering, you know, I typically did my brokering and, you know, freight forwarding classes, things of that nature. But now I've actually moved into doing a drayage course because I see that there is a need for our carriers, our drivers that's in the ports, and those that are interested to come into the industry to understand what they need to do.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're kind of a hybrid, too, when you're dealing with the ports, because you're kind of like an ocean person, but you're also, you know, an inland freight person. You're kind of the in-betweener. It's like their own world, that dray community. I love it, though, because I come from, like, the global ocean side, and then I had to transition to trucking. So, like, I can see both sides of it, and the dray ones, that you guys are right in the middle.
Yeah, we're absolutely right in the middle. We march to the beat of our own drum, baby.
they really do.
I love it.
Dre people are definitely, they are a little bit different than the OTR.
Yes, I be talking good trash on the telephone. I ain't going to even lie to you. You don't want that? Okay, thank you so much. Have a good day.
Well,
tell
me something. So 5 years from now, we're reconnecting. We're doing the follow up of this. I mean, you'll be on my shows all through those 5 years. But where do you think you'll be? Where do you think HG White will be? Where do you think you'll be in 5 years?
5 years from now, definitely have built my own cross docking facility. I'll probably be managing. I'll probably be owner, not managing, because I don't want to be managing nothing.
Yeah.
But I'll probably be owning, I'll say about 2 500,000 square foot facilities, one on the East Coast and one on the West Coast. Of course, one in Savannah, one over on the other side. And then I'll be partnered with doing business, great business with Georgia Port Authority as well as the state of Georgia.
I like it. I'll hold you to it, but I think it's going to happen. I wouldn't bet against it.
Oh, I wouldn't either.
Well, Hope, how do people reach out and learn more and use your services?
So to use our services, of course, we have our website, www.hdwhitelogistics.com. You can go on there and find more out about our services. You can chat with us and send us an email if you need a quote for drayage services or container storage services. I know y'all need somewhere to put them containers. Go on and call you, girl. Okay. And you can follow us on social media, on LinkedIn at HD White Logistics or Hope White. And then on IG, of course, HD White Logistics.
Oh, nice. I got to peep your IG after this show. All of you out there, you can find me at Timothy Dooner on the Twitter. That's DOONER, or look me up on LinkedIn. You know, as long as you're not trying to like spam me with business deals or podcast promotion deals, I accept just about anybody. I'll talk to anybody in this business. I think we're all in this together, and I think that's cool. If you like this show, look up FreightWaves Insiders wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe there. If you want every FreightWaves podcast all on one convenient feed, just look up FreightCast. Everything's on there, including my other show, What the Truck, which is live Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at noon Eastern time. Yeah. With that said, Hope, thank you so much for letting us inside your world today.
Dooner, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure, and anything you need from us, definitely let us know.